Thanks, David. This talk is joint work with Leo Bryman at UC Berkeley. I'm at Utah State. I forgot to put that on the slide. It's in your book. Jerry's already talked a lot about random forest this morning, and I feel a little embarrassed to talk about random forest after how badly it looked on that last slide, but it was only the last slide. And my emphasis is completely different from looking at the accuracy of the algorithm right now. What I'm interested in is the interpretability of random forests, because unlike a lot of the black box machine learning type algorithms, random forests can give you some interpretability, which is crucial to a lot of problems, a lot of problems statisticians are interested in. So what I'm going to talk about is the measures that Leo and I have introduced for interpreting random forests, and then I'm going to show you a graphical package that allows you to access these. It's specially designed for random forests. It allows you to access these interpretability measures in an interactive way. I didn't get much sleep last night. Okay, so as you know already, probably, if you didn't sleep through Jerry's talk, a random forest, we repeat the following steps. We take a bootstrap sample of the data, and then we fit a tree to the bootstrap sample, and then we vote for classification, or we would average if it was regression. We vote the trees to determine the predictions. And the way we choose the trees is to independently, at each node, we sample a certain number of variables, I'll call it M, and we split on the best of those randomly chosen variables. And I'm not sure how much of what I do can be generalized to what Jerry was talking about this morning, but some of it may be able to be. The bootstrap sample, what we found, and this sort of goes along with Jerry's talk this morning, what we found is that the bootstrap sampling doesn't give us much in the way of accuracy, but it gives us a lot in the way of interpretability, because we use the cases that were left out of the bootstrap sample to give us cross-validation type estimates of the trees at each stage. And so where we may not need the bootstrap sample, in fact, a lot of the time, if you fit a random forest on the entire data set and just allow the perturbation to come into the way we fit the forest, the way we fit the trees, then we still get just about as accurate results as we do if we don't have the bootstrap sample. But we don't get the interpretability. So why random forests? Well, and despite this morning's talk, they are often accurate. In fact, I was giving a talk on microarrays the other day, and I took results from somebody else's paper, because sometimes I think the only way to truly get an idea of how accurate your method is to look at when somebody else compares it to other things. It's just irresistible to play around with things a little bit before you publish it. So I can get a really good objective idea of how accurate random forest is by looking at somebody else's study where they're trying to show some other algorithm is good. And in a lot of these studies, and there have been several, random forest turns out to be, on real data sets, about as accurate as most of the other new methods for classification. But we do have interpretability that a lot of these other methods don't have. Hard to get interpretability from support vector machines, for example, although some people are making progress in that. So the way we get interpretability here is complex. You tend to think, okay, we've got a forest of trees, we're going to look at the trees, we're going to do some graphics and explore all of these trees. It's not going to work. There are nice bits of software for trying to do that, and they can give you some insight. But for any sizable data set, that's not going to give you what you want. So the way Leo and I work through this is we obtain proximities, which are proximities for each observation in your data set, or case, or whatever you want to call them, for each item in your data set. We see how similar those items are. And we've worked a lot on trying to get good measures of proximities between cases. For example, you tend to think that if you look just at the data that are left out, that should give you a really good idea of how similar cases are. In fact, it doesn't. So we've worked quite hard on this. I'll describe what we've done in just a minute. The other thing is we look at variable importance. And the thing that's different with variable importance here versus a lot of other models is that we don't just get a global measure of variable importance, we get a case-wise measure of variable importance. So for every, if you're in a medical data mining situation, for every person, you would have an idea of which variables in a way led to them being classified in the way they were classified. Similarly, we can do that class-wise. So for if you've got several groups, you might find that a different set of variables mattered for one group than what did for another group. And this is integral to the tree idea, really, where, you know, you're going down a tree and what you find is when you go over this side of the tree, different variables show up than what happens when you go down this side of the tree. So first of all, what are these? Firstly, proximities. The proximities each time, what we do is we're fitting a lot of trees. Each time two items end up in the same terminal node, whether they're in the bootstrap sample or not in the bootstrap sample, we increase their proximity. And we do that, it turns out that by a lot of experiment, months and months of work, in fact, we found out that the best way to do that, that we can come up with at the present time, is to increase their proximity by 1 over the number of items in the node. If we just increase them by 1, which we did for a while, we get very distorted ideas of proximity, basically because two items that are in the sample, in the bootstrap sample, together, if they have different classes, they cannot end up in the same terminal node. So if we just increase it by 1, we're sort of prejudicing the different cases that are in different classes. Now, from these proximities, we do a multidimensional scaling with all its problems. We actually do a classical multidimensional scaling, although we have plans to implement the Larry Solves method of doing local linear embedding here. That's just a little bit down the road. From the proximities, then, with multidimensional scaling, we come up with some scaling variables that we can look at. And those scaling variables, simply, you know, the only way we have of interpreting those is that two items that are close together in the scaling plot represent items that are viewed similarly by the forest. Now, they may not be close in Euclidean space. They may not be close in any sort of distance measure that you could come up with a priori. In the high dimensions, you know, that's a really difficult task because you're going to have too many noise dimensions probably coming into a distance measure. And you're not going to know which of the variables are important for calculating the distance. So instead, our proximities are simply based on the tree by looking at how often cases end up together. So you could have some nodes in the trees that tend to be very big, the same class. Those cases will seem to be very close in the scaling plot because they always end up together, even though the classes may be quite dispersed in the space that you're in. Then the variable importance is a sort of a very specific version of variable importance, and it's related again to the out-of-bag data. And what we do is when we've got a given tree, a fitted tree, we look at the out-of-bag data. They were not used to fit the tree. We only use the bootstrap sample to fit the tree. The ones that are left out, we call the out-of-bag data. Those data, we take a given variable and we scramble that variable. We permute the values of that variable. So we've essentially noised it up but kept the marginal distribution of it the same. We pass that the whole data set then with that variable noised up, we pass it down the tree and we look at how well we do on those out-of-bag cases. There's no point in looking at how well we did on the cases that were in the sample because the tree's fitted to them. But if we look at ones that were left out, and permute the variable, then we get an idea of how well that variable, how much that variable is used, how useful it is in getting the prediction, how critical it is to getting the right predictions. So let's take a look then at this a little bit more detail. Think of one particular item, one case that has been that is in your data set. In say 1,000 trees, that case will be out of bag in about a third of them. So say it's out of bag in these cases, out of 1,000. Then if you have no permutation, in a two-class problem, for example, this might be a class two case, then it's classified as a two, except maybe in a few trees where you make a mistake. Maybe your overall error rate will be 10% in the out-of-bag samples for this one case. We're just looking at one item. Then if we permute variable one, it's misclassified a little more often. It's misclassified maybe 11% of the time that it's out of bag. So out of the 300 odd trees that it's likely to be out of bag, it's misclassified in about 11% of those. Take a look at this variable though. This variable, it got misclassified a lot more often when variable P was permuted. And so we will get a much bigger error rate when that variables permuted. So we would say that our variable P is a lot more important than variable 1. I'm not sure how much more important we would say it is, but it certainly seems to be more important. So this is a case-wise measure of variable importance. It's if this item is out of bag, how often do we misclassify it if we throw away the data on one variable? So maybe the others can carry it. Maybe the others can take it to the right place, even though that variable's not there. And that might be the case in variable 1, but it's not the case in variable P. Okay, so the idea there then, as I said before, is that in trees, you know, the typical situation is that the reason why people like to interpret these things, I think, is that in different parts of the tree, different variables show up as being important. And this is one of the things that I wanted to capture when I looked at the visualization for this, is this idea that people, when they look at trees, they sort of want to say, okay, for these data, this is what happens. You know, you sort of go partway down the tree and try and interpret what's happening. I wanted to get an interpretation that is a little bit like looking at a single tree. So what I want to look at now is how do we use these measures in order to interpret things. So the first thing that we look at is the multidimensional scaling on the proximities. And what this gives us is it gives us an instant look at which classes are similar, which classes are far apart. It allows us to notice subgroups within classes. Maybe one class is over here and over here, different subgroups within a class. It allows us to identify hard cases or unusual cases to see how they differ from the rest. And the other thing that it allows us to do is find out which variables are locally important. And we can do this by selecting a few cases and looking at which variables are important for those cases. And this is so too tedious without an interactive program. You need something like a Jigobi type program where you can brush data, except that what Leo and I wanted was something more specialized than that, because I don't know how many of you have tried Jigobi. Unless you've worked with it quite a lot, it's quite difficult to get the sorts of things. You know, you can be an expert at visualization, and I know two experts who sat down and it took them quite a while to get anything out of Jigobi. When they did, it was fantastic, but so what Leo and I have developed is something we call RAFT, Leo's idea. It's a random forest graphics tool. It's Java-based. It's a standalone application. It's free and available from Leo's website or from my website. Salford Systems has just released a commercial version of Random Forests, and they've incorporated a lot of the ideas here, probably more than I know about, into their commercial version. But the one that I've developed is open source. You can play with it. You can recode it. You can do what you want with it. Don't take that literally. RAFT uses a couple of pieces of software that I have to acknowledge, because these are nice bits of open source code. It uses DizAd, which is developed for meteorological data primarily, which is a wonderful Java package. That allows you to do all the axes very nicely, 3D rotation and things like that, and ImageJ, which is also incorporated into VizAd. So the first example I'm going to show you, and it probably is going to be the only one, is an example on brain cancer. It's a new example, I just did it last week. It was published in Nature in 2002, and the normalization was done by, I took this from a paper by Detling and Buhlmann, in a 2002 paper. I have 42 cases, nearly 6,000 genes, and actually they're not tumor types, they're tissue types, because one of these is actually normal tissue. The orange one there is normal tissue. So we have five types of tissue, and I've tried to, I don't understand what any of these terms are, but I've color-coded the five groups. Okay, so we're going to see 42 dots, and the five groups are color-coded on this. Okay, so where am I? Let's get out of here, and I'll show you the software, if I can ever get out of here. It's the third one, thank you. That one. Okay, there we go. So this is the brain data, and this is going to take a couple of seconds. So what you're going to see on this first picture is you're going to see the picture of the multidimensional scaling. My laptop's fairly slow, and so the Java is taking a while. There we go. And I don't know how well you can see these, but these are the five different groups. So we have 42 points. Points that are similar on this plot represent tissue types that over those 6,000 genes seem to, and the forest fitted to those 6,000 genes, seem to be similar. They seem to end up in the same parts of the tree. All right, so what you can see there is these were normal tissue. You can see how they stand out from the rest. There were only four of them. You can see that the red and the blue groups are quite close together. That's what the original scientists found as well. Those were both very similar types of tissue. And then this green group and the pale blue group stand out similarly. So that's a little picture of how we can take a look at those. If we look over here at the tool on variable importance, what you see there is this is a parallel coordinate plot of the actual of the variable importance measures. So a big value on that plot means that when we scramble that variable, say variable number two, you see the pale blue ones are high for variable number two? What that means is that when we scrambled variable two, the pale blue classes tended to be misclassified a lot more. When we scrambled variable four, the orange cases tended to be misclassified a lot more often. And in these ones here, with the, this is actually pale green. Oh yeah, it looks more pale green up there than it does down here. The pale green class tended to be misclassified when these last few variables were scrambled. I'm not sure why, because what this is only the most important 10 genes out of the 6,000. I'm not sure why these ones line up like this, and I have to do some more work going back to see what those genes were and if they biologically make sense. I haven't done that yet. But here we picked out the most important 10 genes overall, and we're seeing the local variable importance for those 10 genes. The other thing that we can obtain is ideas of the inputs, so you can see on those 10 genes whether there are really strong patterns. Might look a little, looks like a spider web, and looks a little better when we blend that so that we get the strength of the overlap, you know, because parallel coordinates, you get a lot of overplotting. Sometimes this...
What is on the vertical?
That's horizontal. Vertical. It's the... This is the inputs now. These are the actual gene expressions standardized. Standardized gene expressions for the first 10 genes. This one here was the variable importance. This one's the inputs themselves. If we look at a proximity matrix, this is a heat map of the proximity matrix itself. So dark in here means that the proximities are big, as you would expect. Cases are fairly close to themselves. But what we get in here is you can sort of, I think you can sort of see that the green class doesn't tend to get confused with anything else. The red class tends to get confused with the blue class and with the orange class, and the orange class with the red class. So we're sort of seeing ideas of the proximities there. Now, the other thing we can do with this tool that ends up being fairly useful, that's just to reset that a little bit. I shouldn't do that ad lib. Here we go. We can select a little group, just like we would do in something like we would brush it in Jigobi. Can select that group and then look at the variable importance only for that subgroup. Now, when you've got 42 cases, it doesn't make much difference. But when you've got thousands of cases, that's going to be fairly useful to you. You can get rid of those and see that really for the red and the blue group, variables 1, gene 1 and gene 3 seem to be useful for those to separate maybe them out from each other and from the other ones. So the inputs for those then are given here, and you can sort of see the patterns and where they differ. Variables 1 and variables 3. So the variable importance gives you an idea of what to look for in the variable input, in the input data plot. And I guess I was going to show a different example on autism, but if anybody wants to see that, I can show it after the break, because otherwise I'm cutting into Melissa's time. Get rid of that.